Hello, my beautiful bestie. How you doing today?
Hello, Melissa Rose, and one of our other beautiful besties, Alicia, is here with us today. Hello,
Alicia. Welcome, Alicia.
Hi, guys. Thanks so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
We're so excited to have you.
Thrilled to have you. We're on the same wavelength today, Mel. We're on the same track.
You can just say it again. It's fine. And then we can...
We are so thrilled to have you here today, Alicia. For a more formal introduction, today on the M-Take, we're thrilled to welcome Alicia McCarthy. Alicia is a stellar mom of two, an inspiring entrepreneur behind her business, The Baby Sleep Guru. She's a certified sleep consultant and an occupational therapist who brings expertise to helping young children and their families. She's passionate about transforming sleepless nights into peaceful routines, giving families the incredible gift of sleep, which is so, so, so important, which we'll get into in a little bit. On a personal note, Alicia, you've been a dear friend of ours since college, mm-hmm. and we've shared countless heartfelt and fun memories together. And I would also be remiss if I didn't mention the fun fact that your husband, John, officiated our wedding,
yes.
and holds a dear place in our hearts. So yes. Alicia, welcome to the M-Take. We are so thrilled to have you on the podcast today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. And that is definitely a highlight moment in our lives is, you know, having John marry the two of you. And we will never forget that and appreciate that so much. But yes, I'm so excited to be here. I am a big fan, always listening. I'm excited to fill some people in on some great, you know, helpful sleep tips. If that's all you get from this is some tips, great. Maybe a little bit more. And maybe, you know, if you need any help later on, you reach out to me.
Amazing.
I'd also like to clarify for anyone that's listening that is new to the pod because they're joining because they love Alicia or saw it on Alicia's Instagram. We are referring to Ryan and Michelle being married, not Michelle and I. To be clear, to avoid any confusion, and double clicking on that, John also spoke at my wedding to my husband.
Not me.
Not the wedding of Michelle and I. Because that also could be very confusing if we come back to that. So
however, just
cross the line there.
John, would you like to officiate the wedding?
When the time comes,
I'm sure he would be honored and it would be a definite yes.
Oh, man. I'm so glad you clarified that. I'm a we us our type of gal. So mm-hmm. I leaned in. And yes, it was so special. Again, Alicia, you kind of fill the buckets for us of moving through the phases and the stages, right? Once at the holiday Christmas party, to weddings, to babies. And
yes,
I was actually reflecting with Ryan last night ahead of you coming on the podcast today. And he was like, I remember when you were pregnant and it was 2020 and we were on the phone with John and Alicia and she was telling us all about baby sleep. And he's like, to be honest, I kind of glazed over. But then when we had a 2-month-old, he's like, she really knew what she was talking about. I'm like, I'm going to share that tomorrow because yes, she sure did. And she has created a business since then. And again, excited to kind of get into all of that in just a bit.
Yeah, I think from a very early time of having my first, I became obsessed with baby sleep, done a lot of my own research, and then always tried to help friends, you know, on the back. And then that's when John was like, you really need to try to make this more official because you're good at it, you're passionate about it, and this is where I see your like true passion in. And then, yeah, I've just became more obsessed since and had to use that to create this. So thank you for reminding me of how long this has really been so much a part of my life and really kind of been from the very start with my first, like, really, really just loving it and diving deep into it from the beginning.
I know we're going to dive into the meat and potatoes of it all, but just for context before we move on. So that was 2020. When did you start your business?
So I started the Baby Sleep Guru in August of 2022. So just a little over 2 years. And I became certified in July, I want to say June or July. And yeah, ever since August, I started off as a little, like, I thought this was going to be a side hustle. I was still part-time as an occupational therapist working in home care. I didn't switch to per diem until that following January of 2023. But I was working part-time as an OT. I was just going to do this as a little, like, side hustle. And then it took off. And, as of January 2024, so almost 1 year, this is officially my full-time job, Monday through Friday, 9 to, well, till everyone's asleep. That's when I turn my phone on Do Not Disturb. It's come from a side hustle to a full-on, you know, I put OT, I put my license on hold. I still use a ton of that knowledge and experience with my families, but I realized that this is, like, all I need right now, and this is all I want right now, so, yeah. Very, very, every day I feel very lucky that it has become what it has become.
I love that so much. I can't wait to really dive even deeper into that, because we know that all these different stories that we hear, both here with the guests that come on and just like in our circle, of how you bring your passion and then your actual education sometimes and experience and have it meet at this perfect intersection. And while when you hear people talking about the stories, it sounds like, oh, it happened so quickly or so easily for them. But like, that's actually not what it looks like. But it is difficult, and it requires sacrifice and trade-offs and risks and all of these things. And I personally am in the market for inspiration around these types of things. So I just can't wait to fully dive in. But first, before we get there, two truths, no lies. Michelle, you do a much better job of giving a quick intro on that.
We compliment one another. However, I will take it from here. So, Alicia, I know you listen to the podcast. Thank you for the listen. But I, like Mel said, there's probably people joining today that are listening because of you. So this segment of our podcast is called Two Truths, No Lies, where there are two conflicting truths that are so stark and so real, and they often are in competition with one another. We bring the invisible visible to the surface, and we state them, and it's usually a to some type of anecdote. So we would love to hear what you brought for your two truths, no lies today.
Okay, well, I think I have many, but and I really thought long and hard about this. I was in the car with John, you know, talking to him about this, and I was like, I just have so many, like, based off of listening and really relating and coming up with my own two truth no lies, like by listening to the podcast and saying, like, wow, I thought the exact same thing. But I wanted to tie it a little bit to, like, why I'm on my career, you know, the Baby Sleep Guru, all of that. And I think the best one that I came up with was, you know, when my kids were young and they were taking so many naps and I was really tied to being home, I could not wait until they were older and they weren't on so many naps and we had more flexibility and we could go out and do more and just not be so tied down to home and focused on their sleep. And now that they're older, I am literally wishing some days that they would just be that little again, because the time has flown by so fast. I can't believe we're to the point where my youngest is pretty much almost done with a nap, and now I'm gonna have like no kids napping. And that is like my passion. And now I'm gonna have to just live vicariously through others' sleep. And it's just one of those things that like goes back with, you want time to go by fast because you want to get out of the thick of things. But then once they do, you want to go right back to it again. And, and you don't understand exactly why, but you're realizing time is just flying.
Oh my gosh. Ain't that the truth?
So I think that's that's where I stand on that one. And I feel like it's really, really relatable.
It's so relatable. I constantly am thinking about how this is the first period in my life where I know I am going to be missing it so immensely. And whether that's a year from now or 25 years from now, to be living in a time that is so chaotic and so much going on and so busy, and at times you feel like a shell of a human compared to like who you used to be, it's also something I know that I am going to crave and like yearn for one day. And mm-hmm. to balance those conflicting feelings and needs is a lot. And some days it's beautiful because it can give you perspective. And in your situation, you could say, okay, I'm feeling this way, but that also means I'm going to miss right now. Yes. At some point. And it can give you perspective. Yes. And if you're in a good mental space to take that perspective. But then there's other times where it can just debilitate you a little bit because you're like, I don't want it to move forward because I know that I'm going to miss it. But also it's hard. It's yes. really hard right now.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's not right, to be very clear, not invalidating what's hard or challenging. Mm-hmm. It's acknowledging that. That's another two truths. And like you just want to hold it for as long as possible. Mm-hmm. Actually, I have to share. I'm pulling out my phone right now. I have to share this quote that I screenshotted. Screenshotted? Is that right? Screenshot. Yesterday, last night. Okay. Enjoy your family right now. Don't wait for life to get easier. Don't wait for the paycheck to grow or wait for the dream house. Time doesn't slow down or wait for anyone. And these little moments won't last forever. Look around and you'll probably see that you once dreamed of the very life you are living today. The busy home, the playing kids, the endless to-do list, it's all part of the beautiful life you've been creating. Don't wait to enjoy it.
Oh, I love that.
You send that to me?
Yes.
We'll have to repost that.
That is so true.
That's it. That's it right there.
Who's cutting onions?
So true. And I think about a lot, like you guys talk about a lot about the pink, like getting your pink back mm-hmm. and things like that. And I've never felt more that I have my pink back probably in a very long time. I have this business that is successful. I don't have little ones in diapers anymore. Everybody sleeps good. You know, things are just so, in a way, easier. But then I go back to like, maybe I want the chaos again. Maybe I should have a third, you know?
Yep. It's a yep. weird battle in your mind. Like it yes. plays such games, but yeah, little mm-hmm. people, little problems, right? I yes. always say that too. And mm-hmm. just to enjoy the here and the now and not invalidate the feelings that surface, pleasant, unpleasant, whatever it might be. So thank mm-hmm. you so much for sharing, Alicia.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
thank you. So relatable. Well, now I would love to pivot into the baby sleep guru. Can you please lift up the hood for us? And we already got into it a little bit, but start with, you know, that initial journey that you had mentioned before and deciding, okay, how do I take this into a business and into a side hustle?
Yeah. So I think something that really worked for me that was on my side in all of this was first and foremost timing. I mean, for sure in my life, it was a great time to start a side hustle. It was something that I was thinking about doing that John, my husband, kind of pushed me a little bit more to become like real. And it was a good time. My youngest daughter, she was 18 months, probably around there. She was like out of the thick of it, you know, feeling a little bit more like I had my pink back, you know, a little bit. I was ready to kind of conquer this. And I was dropping down at work a little bit. So I had more time to dedicate. And I knew that's what I needed to really kick this off and get it running. So that's exactly. So first, it was timing was perfect in my life and what was going on. And then the other piece was I live in New Jersey, but I'm from Connecticut. So I knew I had a good base and foundation of I knew a lot of people in Connecticut. I know a lot of people in New Jersey now. You know, we know a lot of people from college, from high school. I knew that that would start kicking me off by just having a good support system, a lot of people that I could connect with and spread the word. So that was huge. And I used that to my advantage. The first couple of clients that I had, they were from Connecticut. They were my sister's friends that had kids, and then they spread the word and that grew. And then I knew I had to be active on social media, which is something that has, it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of screen time, a lot of dedication to posting daily. But I knew if I wanted to keep it growing, that I would have to do that. So 2.5 years later, I try to post every single day. I now have a girl who runs my social media. She does my reels because that was taking too much of my time. She does my nitty gritty, like stuff that I don't want to take my time to necessarily do anymore, just because I have an increase in my clients and it gets difficult to also take on that. And it takes time away from spending with my kids. I was noticing I was on my phone making these reels for, you know, over an hour, sometimes a half hour. And they're like, Mommy, what are you doing on your phone? And I knew that had to stop. That could not be. I did not want them to see me on my phone all the time. So she is a blessing. I hired her and I sent her the content she posts. And really, that's how I've really made this business grow into where it's become. I've been active on social media. I had the foundation. I never stopped posting, even when people weren't answering me. If I got no feedback, if I got no DMs, if I didn't get one friend request or one new follow in over 2 weeks, I still posted, posted, posted. And I think that's how I grew on top of word of mouth. I'm constantly on my prior clients, you know, if you had a great experience, post about me, write about me. I send follow-ups. Hey, write a Facebook message on a mom group. Do a post on Instagram. Send me a testimonial. I'm constantly just trying to keep my name out there, spreading the name. And I think that's how I got to where I am now.
That's awesome. That's awesome. That passion converged with the proactive hustle, right? Mm-hmm. And knowing that, and just reflecting to what I shared before, this was a passion that you became so obsessed with, as you said, because you knew like something just clicked and you were applying this knowledge for your own children, but also had this beautiful innate drive to want to help people in your circle, and myself included, many times that I've said, like, Alicia, something doesn't feel right. Like, do you have a couple minutes, right? So tell us a little bit about that and like how, what you noticed hearing just your own circle and what they were kind of grappling with as it related to baby sleep.
Yeah. So I think it's one of those things that everybody talks about. Mm-hmm. It's either everybody talks about it or nobody wants to bring it up, you know, because they don't want to admit that they're struggling. And I think that that's something that, you know, I try to really make people feel comfortable with on my social media platform. When I talk to people on phone calls, like, it is okay to say I'm struggling and that this is not making me feel like the best mom I could be. Mm-hmm. When I'm not getting enough sleep. I think a lot of moms in our circle, in the outer circle, friends of friends, anybody, people who follow me that I don't even know on social media, they, I think, have trouble, like they feel ashamed in a way to admit that they're struggling with sleep because maybe that makes them feel like they're not being so selfless because they don't want to like correct their little one's sleep or help their little one sleep because then they're not giving everything they have, you know, to their little one in a way, which I really try to explain to my families. That is actually the complete opposite. Like the most selfless thing we can do is help us as a mom, as a dad, you know, whatever it may be, with our sleep, if that's going to make us feel like a more patient, more focused, more involved, the best version of ourselves as a parent, that is being selfless all in of itself. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So I think that's something I really found a lot of families struggling with is just admitting that, you know, they're struggling and they don't want it to seem like they have a child that is difficult with their sleep or that they're struggling with their sleep. I think, you know, a lot of people are ashamed in a way to admit that because then it just seems like, well, you wanted to be a parent. You got to just suck it up and deal with the sleep deprivation. It doesn't have to be like that. You could get great sleep. Your little one could get great sleep. And then you could also be like the best version of yourself. In general, I just think people struggle with so many things. I mean, I hear it all. 4 months sleep regression is the biggest one that my biggest client population. I have tons of 2-year-olds like in the that hit maybe been great sleepers. And then at 2 years old, they are fighting naps, fighting bedtime. Everything becomes a struggle. They're learning so much developmentally, huge cognitive explosions, language development. It just really affects sleep. And then I have like 3 to 5 year olds that just can't stay in a bed that are up every night looking for mom and dad or need someone to fall asleep with. So there's just such a wide range of like issues that families have with their little one's sleep that, you know, go to all directions.
Yeah, it's so true. Like hearing you say that, Alicia, these are all things that I'm reflecting back to my own experiences too, and also processing what you're saying. But this isn't just about the baby sleeping. This is a family system that can be heavily fragmented if you are not getting sleep. Like this transcends the baby.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's life. I could even think about when my little one was going through like an 18-month sleep regression and bedtime was hard. My like cortisol would spike at like 6:30, knowing like, oh gosh, we got quite a journey ahead of us, right? So this mm-hmm. is a whole shift for families to embrace. Mm-hmm. And I also love what you said. It doesn't have to be so hard.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't. Mm-hmm. It's okay to acknowledge that it's hard. And then get the help. And that's where you come in. So tell us about your approach to baby sleep. Why is the baby sleep guru approach different than other or similar to other approaches out there?
Yeah, sure. So one of the things that I loved about the program that I teach and that the reason I believe in it so much is because it takes the science around sleep and being an occupational therapist, that just really hits home with me. Like I understand that more. So what I mean by that is it uses the program I teach, we use natural circadian rhythm to base sleep off of during the day, at night, all of that. So as we do as adults, little ones have the same thing. We have these natural spikes of melatonin throughout the day. When those spikes are happening, we want to be aiming for our little ones to get sleep at those times, whether they're, you know, 4 months old or 5 months old on 3 naps, you know, those spikes of melatonin throughout the day for those naps, that's the times we want to be aiming for getting them down to sleep by for those naps. So they get more restorative sleep. And that is going to help with how long their nap lasts and also help with their overnight sleep as well. So it takes this science-based approach. And then I also look at, speaking of cortisol levels, look at cortisol levels, make sure that our little ones are not going down overtired. If they're going down overtired, they're going to have a spike of cortisol, especially in the early morning hours, like between 4 and 6 a.m. when we naturally have a spike in cortisol to get us up to start our day, they're going to have that increased at a higher level, and it's going to cause a lot of frequent early morning waking. So nailing bedtime based on their day is something I really, really focus on. A lot of generic programs out there, you know, that you print out a guide or you don't get that one-on-one type of help, a couple things. They use a wake window concept that is more towards, okay, let's, you know, take a baby's age and that's the amount of time they should be staying awake for, when in the end, that leads to a lot of little ones becoming overtired because they're not ready to be awake for that long. And we are missing the times where they are naturally the most sleepy during the day, that they're getting their most restorative rest. So now we're putting them down at times and they're fighting sleep. They're not going down as easily. They're not taking as long of a nap that we want them to take. And that directly correlates to their nighttime sleep as well. So I take a shift away from that, focus on the science. My schedules don't change too much as a little one gets older. So let's say like an 8-month-old and a 14-month-old that are taking 2 naps, their schedules are going to be pretty much similar and not too much of a change. Just because they're 2 different ages, that's not going to matter about that. We're still using what is happening naturally in their body and those spikes of melatonin, which then prevents a little one from becoming overtired. It balances out their day the best too, and it helps with their overnight sleep. And then last thing I'll say about the support, it's one-on-one with me. So everything is geared towards your little one. So our goals are what you want your goals for your little one to be. So if you want them to still have a feeding in the night, let's put a feeding into their plan. If your doctor said they have to have 2 feedings, when are those 2 feedings going to happen? And what is it going to look like around that? We want them to wake up for the feeding, go right back down, like very easy, very routine. So everything is very individualized, customized to whatever your needs for your little one and for your family, whatever goals you have for them.
That's super interesting, Alicia. So are you saying, for example, as someone who only has 1 child, right? So I was able to be like really strict and like really just, this is what we're doing. This is how we're doing it. And I think I inherently have a good sleeper. She had her regressions like everyone else, but it wasn't too challenging with her. And then you have a second, right? And one of my best friends, Victoria, who you know, she says the second's more like a rhythm than a routine, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what you're saying actually, I feel like resonates with that, in that I could come to you and say, okay, like what worked before we loved, but like now I have 2 kids and I have a, say, 4-year-old that has, you know, certain schedules or obligations, yes, and we're commuting. Like, I can't do the same schedule as before. Yep. You could come in and be like, I'm glad that worked for number one. Let's find something that's going to work for number two. And to Michelle's point, the rest of the family, because it does mm-hmm. transcend.
Yes, absolutely. So that is probably my most common types of families that I work with, are ones that have multiples that are saying, you know, my first was a unicorn sleeper, or I just went with their sleepy cues or whatever, and it worked. Like, they were a great sleeper. And now my second, either that's not working, what I was doing before, or, you know, that doesn't work now. I can't just every day be so different in their schedule because my older one has activities and I kind of need to plan around it. So therefore, you know, we come up with a more predictable schedule, so you kind of know what's happening and it's not changing every day because we're following a wake window concept that's going to be, you know, some days a nap at 9:30, and then if they wake up at 11, I'm going to calculate 2.5 hours, and today the next nap's at 1:30, but tomorrow it's going to be at 2 if they sleep a little bit later. Like, it's more set, and it helps especially families with multiples be able to plan their day a little bit better. And then in the other way too, that flexibility, like, for example, right now I have a family, she has to go pick her oldest one up from daycare at the time when our second nap would normally be, like, our ideal time. She's like, I have no choice. I can't put her down at that time. And we want her little one to get, like, a good nap. So I said, on the days that you have to go pick her up, which is like 3 days a week, we're going to do this schedule a little bit different. We're going to have her sleep a little bit later for the first nap, push back the second nap. But normally on the days that you don't have to pick her up, or on the weekends, we want to aim to for this schedule. So she has like two modifications to basically the same schedule, but a slight modification to just help her with those days she has no other choice but to bring the youngest with her.
That's so interesting, and it's probably just so useful for these families. I never hired a sleep consultant for our first, but my friends that did, one thing that they really spoke a lot about was it's a third party to say, well, this is what we're doing. So when mom and dad, or mom and mom, or dad and dad are coming together and saying, like, we're sleep deprived, you don't know what's going on, and I have this idea, and I have this idea, and I was up in the middle of the night, and I was researching this, like, you have a unified, well, this is what Alicia said, so yes, we're just going to stick to that. Mm-hmm. And then that way, it kind of alleviates that back and forth. It puts, like, almost an autopilot. You yep. help them find something that works for them, and then they can run with it. What's the typical, like, you have to remain consistent. Is it like a 2-week thing? Do you advise people on, you know, no travel when you first start? Because I know that's something that we want to talk about with the holidays coming up and, yes, and things like that.
So going back to that point, Mel, that you made about, like, that the sleep consultant being the third party, it is so true. I think the best feedback I get is after we're done, they're like, you were the one we knew we had to report to every day. You were holding us accountable for mm-hmm. what we did. And we knew if we didn't follow it, you were going to say, like, hey, what's going on? You know, this is why it's not working. And that alone helped people who tried to do their own thing by themselves, you know, off the internet, buying like a self-guided general program, who tried to just do something and not have someone to report back to. Something that they loved was having somebody that held them accountable every day to say, hey, did you do what we talked about? Great. You know, this is what we could change up. This is what we could do moving forward. And they knew exactly what to do every day. They no longer had to look up on Google, like, should we try this? Should we try this? They didn't have to find an Instagram person that talked about baby sleep to just try whatever they were saying. Like, it was just, we are going to stick with Alicia says, and mm-hmm. we're going to follow what she does. And, you know, that was like the best feedback people always say, is that it was nice to have someone to really check in with every day and to know for sure what our plan was going to be. But yes, going off the last thing you said, Mel, about consistency, I usually ask for 2 weeks for any one of my programs of solid consistency. That doesn't mean, say you have a birthday party that was already planned in the 2 weeks, that, oh, let's wait until the following 2 weeks. No, we will make it happen. If that nap has to be on the go, fine. After the 2 weeks, I usually tell my families it's an 80-20 rule, and I always, always relate it back to a diet plan. So if you follow a diet and you have all these goals that, like, okay, I want to lose this amount of weight by this time, and so I'm going to follow your plan because you said if I do it, I'm going to lose the weight, and then you're done with the program and you go back to just doing whatever you were doing before, and you realize, oh, wow, I just went back to eating whatever I was eating before, all my old habits, I'm not exercising, all of this, and now I gained back that 10 pounds that I really tried hard to lose. Of course that's going to happen. The same thing goes with this. This was a plan. We changed habits. We changed routines. We now have a strong little sleeper. If we go back to doing all the things we were doing before, you're just going to go back to exactly what your little one was doing with their sleep before. But if we have a nice balance, because we already have the foundation, we already met our goals, let's have a nice balance of also enjoying life and going out by saying 80% of the time we're going to stick to our routine Monday through Friday. We're in the grind. It's, you know, we're during our work week. It's easier to stay with the routine, the naps, all of that. But then on the weekends, we have a birthday party in the morning. What are we going to do in the afternoon for naps, vice versa? And that is something on our very last call that I go over with my families is let's talk about scenarios. Let's talk about traveling, holidays. Let's talk about when a nap skipped, when the nap's on the go. What do we do with the rest of the day?
That's so helpful to have it quantified in that way too, and then have the families be able to apply their knowledge to more generalized contexts, because that's ultimately the goal, right? And before we take a turn and talk more specifically about the holiday season and tips for that, I just want to carve out space for a second, because we hit on a lot of the tenets that align with our philosophy on the MTake, right? The flexibility, the meeting people where they are, regardless how old they are, whether they're 4 months old or whether they're 40 years old, grappling with this at night, and the accountability partnerships. Mel and I talk about that all the time. So just wanted to carve out space and acknowledge how important those tenets are, no matter what we're talking about. So I'm so, so thrilled to hear that you're also living and breathing those within the baby sleep guru hemisphere too. Yes. So exciting.
Yes, for sure.
So tips and tricks and advice ahead of the holiday season, talk to us, because you're talking to some type A girlies, especially a rigid girly over here. I've gotten better with baby number two, but talk to us about the holiday season and what you can offer us.
Yeah. So a couple things. One, when a little one is on multiple naps, so you have a small little one, 4 months old, 5 months old, 6 months old, they're taking, you know, 3 naps a day, and you're wondering, what are you going to do? You're out for the whole day for the holiday. You're at somebody's house, whatever it may be. I always recommend to my families, if you could try for one of those 2 naps, those 2 bigger ones being home for the day, like if it's the morning one, because you know the rest of the morning one's easier, you're going to be home, maybe you're packing up your things, so you put your little one down for their nap, they take one good restorative nap, because the first 2 naps of the day are the most restorative, so we want one of those to at least be in the crib for the day, so it's nice and restful and restorative. And that's going to help your little 5-month-old, 6-month-old carry on for the rest of their busy day around all these people, all the stimulation. If they get that one good nap, that's going to help them be a little less cranky. And then maybe your second nap's in like a carrier that you're wearing, or maybe in a car seat, or maybe you bring a pack and play and it's you're going to your family's house and they have an extra room and you pop up a pack and play with a sound machine, close the curtains, and you have them take a nap on the go. I always, always emphasize the importance of once you lay the foundation and have a solid, independent, strong sleeper, the flexibility is in having you pop up a pack and play in a hotel or at someone's house and them being able to get themselves to sleep without any issue. And now you just got your second nap down in a space where it's also very restorative. And now you know you're going to be out till 8:30 and they're going to be well rested. So that's first and foremost. If you could just get one nap of those 2 big ones at home on the holiday, or at least put down somewhere and not in a carrier or in a car seat, so the nap is a bit more restorative, that's going to help carry them throughout the rest of the day for that later bedtime, all of that. And then my other tip is pushing out the cat nap a little bit later, just to bridge if you know you're going to be out late, that second nap in bedtime. That's for my little ones.
I just want to double click really quick on the point you just made. How laying the foundation and being strict or rigid in the beginning then will lead to flexibility. That was something that Mike and I were, I swear it was like our talk track for the first 6 months of my daughter's life, because you feel like you go into being a parent and you're like, I'm not going to be one of those parents that like gets like stuck by, I'm going to live my life, I'm going to do this. And like, all joking aside, when you become one and you start to realize like, oh, like people are doing that for their own sanity just as much as they're doing it for their baby, right? But there is this like guilt or the shame around like, oh, like I said I'd be more flexible, or I said I'd do more of this, but when Mike and I realized, because it happened for us, right, that like just laying that foundation actually does breed flexibility later on. And I, so when you said that, I like got little goosies, because it, in our situation, I have a one of one trial study here, but like in our situation, that really has been the case. And 20 months later, it still is. She's still on a pretty good routine, pretty, but she's a good sleeper. And like those nights where we push it, or we're out, or we do this, hotels, traveling, grandma and grandpa's house, wherever it might be, she sleeps. And I know that's part of her chemical makeup, but I think it really is creating those fundamental skills for them.
Yes.
So I really wanted to double click on that, because I think that's such an important point.
Yes. I 100%, that is something I really try to emphasize with my family. It's like, I know the first couple of weeks working together is hard. It's a change. You're changing up everything. It's dedication for sure, but it will be worth it, because then the flexibility will come. You will be able, and I always refer back to my kids, they could travel anywhere and sleep anywhere, and they sleep through the night. There is no question. They do not get up. We stay at a hotel, my parents' house, a friend's house, whatever it may be. They will sleep through the night. I know I'm going to get good sleep. They're going to get good sleep. And we're all going to wake up in a great mood the next morning when we're on vacation, especially. And it just makes it so much easier in the sense of like, I know they're not going to be so overtired because they barely slept and they were up so many times because they don't know how to sleep because they never had to, you know, find their own comfy spot. And now you throw a new environment in the mix and they're like, hey, what do I do now? This is not what I'm used to. And now that just increases wake ups. And now let's say vacation, your vacation is completely spent with a cranky, overtired baby or child, and that's not really a vacation at all. So overall, it's huge, like just to dedicate. It's such, I always say it's 2 weeks, like 2 weeks of your life to dedicate to having so much flexibility. And yeah, after we're done, you don't want to completely derail, but you'll have the foundation and the skills and the knowledge and somebody to always turn to ask, hey, what do I do in this situation when this comes up? You know, how do I modify? How do I adapt moving forward?
Right, right. It's a big investment with a big reward for everyone, all constituents of the family.
Yeah.
And in that vein, Alicia, when do you think people should prioritize learning about baby sleep?
So I have so many different views on this, but I am a firm believer. You start from the beginning, newborn age. I have little newborn programs. I have just 30-minute phone calls just to give out some like tips and tricks to get you through 0 to 16-week time frame, because newborn sleep is erratic. It's unpredictable. We have circadian rhythms that aren't developed. There is nothing, we could aim for schedules each day. And that's something that, especially if you're that type of personality that likes to have that, it's some helpful for a lot of my newborn families that they have something to aim for each day to base sleep off of, feedings off of, all of that. But in the end, you're going to have some great days with a newborn sleeper and some not great days. And that's okay. But at least you're getting started in the beginning by prioritizing sleep and making it, you know, somewhat of an importance in your family routines. Because then at 16 weeks or 4 months, a lot of little ones go through that 4 month regression. And the reason that happens is because circadian rhythms completely develop. Their sleep cycles shift from 2 sleep cycles to now 4 sleep cycles at night. So they start waking up more. And it's a developmental change in their sleep system that becomes very much adult-like sleep. When that happens, little ones are ready to start consolidating their daytime sleep, learning more independent sleep so that they could get through those sleep cycles and consolidate their sleep. That is true go time for like, let's start early, 4 months, 16 weeks, let's meet them where they're at developmentally and really prioritize sleep and get them on a solid routine, because that's going to help in all the other regressions, transitions, all the things, even up to toddlerhood, even the time they get into a bed, laying that foundation early is going to be really helpful. But some people don't start that early. And I have a lot of families that start at 3 or 4 and we still figure it out. We still get them sleeping through the night. Total different approach, but we still get there. So I am also a firm believer that it's never really too late to get started.
Mm-hmm. Love that. And Ryan and I will often say, like, oh, is there a software update for our little one? Like, that's what you're talking about, as it relates to these developmental progressions, not necessarily regressions.
Yes.
And I did find it helpful, and I know not everybody thinks this way, but I did find it helpful to start at least learning about baby sleep while I was pregnant. Mm-hmm. Under the advice of you, Alicia. Mm-hmm. And that really helped, because when I was in the moment, I wasn't learning it for the first time. I was relearning or reteaching ourselves of, like, okay, this didn't work. So much of it is trial and error, as you said, and Mel and I talk about that all the time. Like, oh, this was a really good day. I have to repeat everything that we did. Like, it doesn't really work like that. Like, yes, there might be some golden key that works, but at the same mm-hmm. time, I found it helpful learning and reading about it while I was pregnant.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the more information you could find out in the beginning, the more you could just, you know, fill yourself with knowledge about that. It just helps in understanding why baby sleep is so unpredictable and erratic, instead of being like, you know, I have a lot of families that are like, I just don't think I have a good sleeper. And I truly believe in those newborn ages, in those first few weeks, some of us just get lucky with a really good natural sleeper, and some of us just get still very lucky with a baby that's a little bit more alert and awake and has trouble napping and sleeping during the day. But then at 16 weeks, I really do believe that every baby could become a really good sleeper, no matter what their past was, no matter if they were held. You know, so many people are like, I held my little one for 4 months of their life for every single nap, bedtime. There's no way they're going to be able to sleep independently in a crib in their own space. And we get there and they're amazed. And it's like, it's okay of whatever your past was, whatever you were doing to survive, that I never judge any of that. It's just now we're going to help lay a really solid foundation moving forward and really emphasize, like, let's meet our little ones where they're at. What was working prior is no longer working, especially as they get older and more mobile. Just doesn't work to have them rocked on you all the time. But if that's what you do, you know, needless to say, I truly believe whatever works for you and your family, you should do. But at the time when you feel like it's not working, it's time to reach out.
I love that. In terms of back to the holidays, you mentioned what you would do for the younger ones, the newborn, the little ones. For the older ones, now you mentioned earlier a lot of families coming to you with the 3 to 5 year olds. This is something I was unaware of, this progression that happens once we get out of the crib and we're in our big boy, big girl, big child bed. And it scares me more than anything, honestly. I feel like I'm in for it. I really do. I have a sleep procrastinator. She's like her mom. She will pull out any excuses to not go to sleep currently, and she doesn't even have a full vocabulary yet. I told Michelle last night that she said, no, not yet, mama, work, and grabbed a pretend cell phone and left the room and started talking on the phone.
Oh, my goodness.
And I'm like, I don't know. I'm scared. So anyway, especially going into the holidays, the lens on that, I can imagine it's probably a lot easier for parents who are already managing so much, under so much stress and pressure with everything we have on our plate this season. A child's waking up, getting in the bed in the middle of the night, like that's really hard. And you know what? We only have so much bandwidth to be like laying guidelines and routines and structure. Yes. And now, like, we're going to meet ourselves where we are. Mm-hmm. What do you recommend in these situations, in this period of time that seems quick, but it really is like 6 weeks of time? So
yeah,
how does everyone navigate that?
So I actually have a lot of prospective families that have been reaching out, and like they have that exact situation, Mel. My little one's climbing into, I just got off a call, and they really wanted to address their little one's sleep because the little one kept coming out of bed and coming into their bed, and it was becoming very difficult. But they have a lot of traveling coming up. They're coming back to the States for the holidays, and she doesn't know if it's a good time to start. And she's leaving in 12 days. And, you know, I have my 2 week of solid consistency. So we talked about, let's pause and start fresh after the holidays, just because we don't want to implement all of these great positive, different routines and habits right now and change a little buddy, a little one who's very set in their ways, 3 to 5 years old, they are very set. If they're coming into mom's bed and dad's bed every night, guess what? Want that every single night, they're going to look for it. So it's better, I say, to pause right now because we're so close. Like if you don't have 2 weeks before you're about to leave for the holidays, I say, let's pause and wait and reach back out to me as soon as you're home. And we're going to get started because most people after the holidays, they have time to dedicate. They're motivated. It's the start of the new year. They're like, let's get something new going here. I want my sleep back. I want my little one to have better sleep. And that's when I'm like, let's reach out then and talk about how are we going to get your little one staying in their bed. And the biggest issue around little ones not staying in their bed is the understanding of the boundary and maybe getting into a bed too soon is what I find, where they don't actually understand the imaginary boundary of a bed. And they also don't have the developmental capacity of that impulse control to say, okay, wait, mom and dad said I have to stay in the bed. They just naturally are getting up. That whole like, oh, mom and dad said to wait, stay, is not quite there yet. So that impulse control is not established. So they're just getting up. They get in bed, they come to the top of a sleep cycle and they wake up and they're like, wait, mom or dad isn't here anymore. They're not laying with me. Something's different. I'm gonna run and go find them. It happens all the time. It's so common. So for families who have little ones that are getting ready for the holidays, who are struggling with that, unless if you have a good solid 2 weeks before you're about to leave and embark on your holiday adventures, I would say right after you know you're home for 2 weeks, let's dedicate to getting that all figured out.
It's another concrete example of timing being so key in so many different ways. Waiting, mm-hmm. of course, until it's a good time, whether it's in December or January, but also waiting for that transition, whether it's from a crib to a bed. And Alicia, you helped me see I didn't need to rush into that transition. Like, these are artificial timelines when we're like, they have to get out of a crib and they have to go in a bed.
Yes.
Hold the friggin' phone. Wait. Yes. Wait. And let me tell you, waiting was the best decision that we made for our family because now he stays in his bed.
Yes.
And if I did it sooner, I know that would not have been the case.
Yes.
Juxtaposing, not comparing to other people, but comparing to other people in my circle, that it wasn't the case if they did it too soon.
And I think the biggest thing is people think the bed will make things better. So they think, okay, my little one's sleep is completely thrown off. They are not sleeping well in their crib. They're trying to climb out. That's the biggest one I hear. And so I got to put them in a bed. And then you have the fun, the newness of the bed, the excitement of my big girl or big boy bed. They stay in the bed for like 2 weeks, a month. All of that wears off. Boom, we still have the underlying issue, which is the sleep foundation not 100% being there. And then we have the issue of they're not developmentally ready to understand that concept of staying in a bed. So now we have these little ones that are running everywhere in the middle of the night and becomes a huge, I really emphasize this with my families, a safety risk. You know, your little ones up in the middle of the night running to your room. Thank God they run straight to your room. What if they run down the stairs or, you know, go out the front door? God forbid. Like things like this, you hear these stories. This happens because, you know, sometimes our little ones just aren't ready. So I always say we never make the transition to a big kid bed when our sleep isn't going so great. We always make it when we know our sleep is strong and when we could sense, you know, our little ones kind of sticking to the boundaries a little bit more. Like if I said to stay there on the sidewalk, don't move, and your little one comes running after I just said to stay, probably not ready for a bed. It goes hand in hand.
I like that concrete example. That's something that someone could really remember. I already know that that is going to be stuck in my head. In generally speaking, knowing everyone's a little bit different, is there a certain age or time when you would say, okay, it seems like they're staying on the curb, but they're only three. Is that appropriate? Or like what is your recommendation? Or is it just meet people where they are? It's different for everyone.
So I usually recommend between 3.5 and 4 years old is the sweet spot just because it's where that impulse control is actually being developed the most at that time and that understanding of the boundary. However, I have so many families I work with who they're not going back. They made the transition. Their little one's in a bed at 3, 2.5. I've worked with some that are 2 and they don't want to go back. I always educate on the why of why it's hard for them to stay in the bed, because I think it's always important to understand, you know, that developmental progression and why it's happening like that. But regardless, I always meet a family where they are at in terms of their decision. And then we have to use personality of the little one. I always ask about how far are they in their language and communication, because we could use that to our advantage to building a really great, fun sleep plan to get our little ones to stay in the bed. But I would say in a concrete age, if it was a perfect world and everyone would listen to whatever I said, I would say, try to wait till 3.5. Even if your little one is like asking, because they say one of the signs is like asking for a big kid bed. If their sleep is not great in the night and they're waking up early or waking up in the middle of the night, regardless if they're asking for the big kid bed or not, you need to get the sleep down first and then make the transition. And in a perfect world, it wouldn't be anytime before 3.5. But 3, I will take.
And what about the safety component? It seems to be a milestone that people hold on to. So if my toddler was climbing out of their crib, yes, and that's a safety risk, I hear that's when people usually switch over. Is there, yes, an in-between there, like getting the toddler rail or, yes, or whatever that is?
I would always recommend – so first, I'm a big believer that crib climbers – that whole behavior and action could actually be reversed with our reaction to what they're doing. So, and I've seen it happen multiple times. I work with families that didn't make the transition yet, but they reached out as soon as their little one started to climb. They knew they weren't ready for a bed, but they wanted to make a change. So they reached out. We got talking. We agreed that they're going to stay in the crib. We talked about ways to, you know, modify the crib to make it a little bit more safe and less likely for them to climb out. Lowering it, turning it around, putting the back, the higher part in the front, putting the mattress all the way on the ground. And I have actually had families build like plywood underneath so that they can put it on the ground but not have that gap between the frame and the mattress for like a little wrist or a little hand to get caught. We definitely don't want that. So putting the plywood and then the mattress fills that gap. But things like that, first, we modify the actual environment. Once we get that all set, I always say, is your little one in a sleep sack? If they're not in a sleep sack anymore, then, and they haven't been in a sleep sack, then I say, okay, scratch that. We're not going to throw like a 2.5-year-old in a sleep sack who hasn't been in one since they were 1. You know what I mean? They're going to be like, what is this? I don't want this. So scratch that, fix the crib. And then I teach my families one, timing, because timing and getting of our little ones down at the right time could help prevent them from getting overtired, which then lessens the chance of these actions like crib climbing, protesting in the bed or in the crib, things like that. So one, we nail timing. And then two, if they start to climb and you're noticing it, our reaction is going to be nothing. It's going to be boring, simple. We go in, we say our crib is for sleeping, not for climbing, and we leave. And that's it. As a couple more times, I always see maybe once or twice they try to experiment, and then it's done because they're not getting the reaction that they were looking for maybe the first or second time they did it. The, oh no, what are you doing? That's not safe. You're going to fall out. Any reaction kids like, whether it's negative or positive.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's our choice whether we pour the fuel on the fire, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah, so important and helpful to remember.
This is so helpful. Just everything. So many. I feel like this is a concrete grenade episode.
Yeah, Michelle. Exactly.
Like, I feel like we're just like
on and on.
Facts.
Yeah.
We do like to end our episodes, Alicia, though, with a mantra or a think about or some type of takeaway for our listeners and ourselves to keep in our back pocket. It could be related to baby sleep. It could be related to motherhood, personhood, really any way that you want to take it. What do you want to leave us with today?
Yeah, so I thought about this and I really think what I want to leave everybody with is what we kind of hit on in the beginning. Being a good parent doesn't mean you have to sacrifice every bit of yourself for your child. And actually being the best parent is actually knowing your needs, caring for yourself, and recreating the best version of yourself. And that's what I try to really emphasize with my business is, you know, it's not all about the baby sleep. It's also about us as parents and making sure that we are the best version of ourselves. And sometimes for many people, that's getting the right amount of sleep so that their patience is there, their attention is there, and they feel like they are somewhat back to being how they were before they were a parent.
Mm. That's beautiful. That. And it's so true, especially with something that if you haven't gone through it, when your child is particularly having a progression, is that what you said before, Michelle? Mm-hmm. When they're going through something, you know, in those early days, you're used to not sleeping. You're used to your adrenaline just like keeping you going. So it's almost like a little easier in the beginning when they're not sleeping. And yes. then you get used to a certain schedule, routine, predictability, flexibility, and then something changes. And it is like a level of exhaustion that I don't really remember having in the beginning because it's unexpected and your adrenaline's not pumping you through and whatnot. And then you add in the emotional factor of it. You add in the, and I don't know, and we don't need to go down the rabbit hole of whether or not you do this, but the cry it out or the this and that, like however you are navigating that particular phase and stage can be a lot. And I know that what I would do is I would just sit there and remind myself why I was doing it and that yes. I am a good mom and I'm not abandoning her. I'm not ignoring her. I'm not meeting her needs. What I'm doing is I am helping her to lay the foundation to build skills and tools that yes. she will carry through the rest of her life. And that was something that Michelle taught me, and like literally having these mantras that I could just, I truly remember the first time I was letting her cry it out during the day. No one was home. It was just me and her and the dogs. And I remember just standing in my bathroom mirror, crying, saying these mantras to myself, just listening to her cry. And it's so true. And it can extend far beyond the actual idea of sleep, right? And sleep training yes. and all of that. And that it's, we got to give ourselves the oxygen mask in order to give it to them. And for sure. It's a huge tenet here as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do, just going off that just a slight bit, I do have a variety of different methods. However, I will say, based on age and what I think is going to be the most effective, not prolong the process and do what you feel comfortable with to make sure we're meeting what the family feels comfortable with and also your little one's personality, what is going to be most helpful. And I always say that to my families, Mel, about the mantra you have. And I am like their mantra. I always say, I will be your mantra the night you start. I will text you until your little one is asleep, and then I'll turn my phone off, and I will encourage you. I will coach you, support you. I love to do that. It's one of the things I really pride myself in the level of support I provide, is like, I want to be there to encourage you to get through it, because I know how worth it is, how happy you'll be, how happy your little one will be, and how even if we do pick a method that is a little bit more crying, it is not because their needs aren't being met. They are so met all day long. You are meeting every single one of their needs. They know they are so loved. They're just frustrated. They can't communicate that any other way other than crying. They can't talk and say, I'm mad. This is new. They cry. So,
right. And you remember the crying it out for you and for them. They're not going to remember the crying like you are.
No, mm-mm. Not at all. And during the day, you're going to give them all the love and all the hugs and all of the snuggles. And that's what matters. And I'm always a believer in like going in and kind of, you know, showing our presence. And I always remind my family of, we are actually going in. We are not leaving them to cry it out. We are going in and saying like, I'm here. It's okay. Yes. I'm just giving you some space. That's
exactly.
all.
Exactly. And the impact of bountiful sleep versus the impact of sleep deprivation is quite profound. Yes. And zooming out, as you've mentioned this whole episode, which is so, so powerful to hear, it has a holistic impact on every facet of your functioning, your partnership. Yes. We didn't even go down that route. Oh, we could have. But like if your baby's yes. in your bed with you and your partner, that's not going to be great for your relationship. Right. Yeah. So the impact domino effect that the sleep deprivation can have versus the impact that bountiful sleep can have for every constituent of your family is everything. So yes. thank you for all the hard work that you are doing for our families and for sharing it today and just taking time out of your day to come on here and share all of this with us. We can't thank you enough, Alicia.
Well, thank you guys. I am honored and was so excited to do this. And I hope that, you know, I could spread the word a little bit more and provide more knowledge. I feel like we could go on and on. I'd love a whole topic on like how important sleep is for your relationships, you know, yes. so important.
Well, we'll need a part two and a three yeah. and a four and a five. I know that there are going to be so many people listening to this and it's going to resonate and they're going to have real concrete things to walk away with. I know I am in particular. So again, as Michelle said, just echoing, thank you so much for taking the time. Really so appreciate it, especially ahead of the holiday season mm-hmm. too, because we really wanted it to be framed around that, because it's a tricky time to stick with routines, even for us, let alone our little ones.
Yes.
So,
for sure.
Alicia, where can everyone find you and learn more about the Baby Sleep Guru?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram at the Baby Sleep Guru. That's where you can find mostly all of my testimonials, my reels, helpful information, helpful tips and tricks, what working with me looks like, more about me and my family, more about my employees that I have that work with me, and really get more knowledge about the Baby Sleep Guru. And that's where I do most of my stuff. Oh, I am on Facebook at the Baby Sleep Guru. I have a nice little page going there, but most of my information on Instagram.
Amazing. And they can reach out to you directly there and information about booking and
scheduling. Yep. I have a link in my bio. You can sign up for a free 15-minute consult call that we could just talk about your little one's sleep background, find out their daytime, nighttime schedule. And then I could explain to you what working with me looks like and how I could help moving forward and what I think is going on with their sleep.
Well, thank you so much, Alicia. So good to see you. I hope to see you in the flesh soon. And I knock on wood, will probably be reaching out to you in the near term, hopefully not too near term, for baby sleep, because we're okay right now, knock on wood.
Good. Good. I'm happy for that.
Well, thank you so much. And we'll talk to you soon.
Big hugs. Big hugs to both of you. Toodles.
Love you.